Welcome back, everyone. Last week was insane. We spoke about a lot of different things and a lot of different things we still have to cover. We've still got to talk about Global Airlines and their somewhat scam launch. More to say about that. China Southern are still planning to sell their 787-8s, but haven't gotten it off the ground yet. No bidders. Western Sydney Airport are still looking to transition to a fully remote tower, and they're not the only ones in Australia who are looking to do it, actually. We also need to talk about Nathan Fielder's new season of The Rehearsal, where he talks about the dynamic between first officers and captains in the cockpit. Very, very interesting. We didn't talk about what was happening in Amsterdam, something very strange for sure. And the future of low-cost carriers. We need to know what Michael Leary has to say about these new standing seats on offer in low-cost carriers. And then finally, what happens when a captain gets locked out of the cockpit for upwards of 10 minutes? Again, not a hypothetical, something that's actually happened. Welcome to the Radio Runway Podcast.
Fellas, it's good to be back. Once again, we haven't left it for a year, which is promising. It's good. I tell you what, mate, I am really keen to figure out what's going on in Amsterdam, because I myself don't even know what's going on. But before we get to that, we ended it last week talking about Global Airlines.
Yes.
Now, for those who don't know, it starts when a person called James Asquith, who's been overtaken now in the Guinness Book of Records as being the youngest man to travel all countries in the world.
At the point at which the airline was launched, that was one of their main selling points for the owner of Global Airlines. Technically the owner. I actually don't think he was the one that sought financial backing. I think the financial backers sought a face to the brand that wasn't them. And James Asquith was that person. And at the time, he had traveled to every country in the world. And he was the youngest to do so. So, yes, you're correct.
So, Global Airlines, I guess its purpose is to bring back the glamour of flying. Now, we're planning to talk about standing seats in low-cost carriers. And, you know, we look at the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, you know, people flying, there's lounges, you can smoke on board, which obviously, you know, you won't ever be able to do nowadays.
No.
You know, you look at the fine dining, and now you sort of look like, you know, sit in economy, you have a meal like dog's breakfast sort of thing, and it's just travel.
Mm.
It's like getting on the bus.
Yeah.
But I guess what he wants to do is he wants to bring back the glamour of air travel.
Mm.
And he's doing that.
The glitz.
Exactly, the glitz and the glamour.
Mm.
But he's bringing back a A380, which has been retired by China Southern. It's been in Victorville.
Yes.
In the aircraft boneyard for a few years.
Yeah.
And he has attempted, and whether successfully or unsuccessfully, that's up to you guys, reactivated that aircraft and brought it back into commercial service. Now, a couple of weeks ago, they launched their initial first flight.
Yeah.
Which was a flight from Glasgow to New York.
And tell us, why specifically is it being labeled a scam flight? Because I have read about that. Why are they saying that their first flight is a scam flight? What's the reason behind that?
Well, first of all, they just don't seem ready for it, to be honest. You look at all the flight reviewers and you look at their videos, you know, Josh Cahill, Noel Phillips, for example. I mean, Josh Cahill complains a lot, but Noel Phillips, you know, when he complains, you know, it's pretty serious. And you look at the state of like the cabin, you know, this is an airline that's meant to bring back the supposed golden age of flying.
Yeah.
And he's sitting in first class and, you know, there's lamps that are powered by USBs and
From Kmart type thing, you know,
and you know they're labeling, you know, this thing called a Sky Pub, and all they've done is stuck a sticker on a galley, and you know there's tears in the seats, and the, you know, the headrests are falling off and everything. So clearly something's going on there. First of all, their first flight, you'd expect it to be fully packed out. There's only less than 100 people on it, and most of that is press.
I didn't even know that.
When asked about what their plans are for the future from the press, they go, I don't know. So they launched 4 official first flights. So they did Glasgow to New York return, and then they ferried it down from Glasgow down to Manchester, and they did New York to return on that. And how Global Airlines are currently working is they don't use their own crew, they don't use their own
So was it outsourced, was it?
It's at loss. So it's a wet lease from a company called HiFly, which is charter company. So it's ACMI wet lease. So that's aircraft, crew, maintenance, and insurance. So that's all covered under HiFly, and it's global. The brand who are obviously
yes.
But it's just a strange airline. You can't buy your tickets conventionally as you usually would. You know, on the first launch, there was no real, James Asquith wasn't really there. He wasn't even on that flight. Like, you'd expect your CEO.
Yeah, you think of, what Alan Joyce did, whenever they launched, with Project Sunrise.
Yes.
Front and center.
Even Vanessa Hudson now, same thing. Yeah.
That's the way to go. I don't know much about this. So you're saying that they're supposed to be this glamorous airline. They didn't even do a proper cabin refit before they...
No. In fact, one of the aircraft they've acquired, it might actually be the one that's launched. It's got the Global Airlines tail with the Global Airlines logo, but the body is the combination of blues in the stripe that forms the China Southern livery. Mm. It still is China Southern plane, but with a global sticker on the tail. And as you said, it's weird to have an airline try to upscale with 380s. As we talked about last week, you need to go all in or nothing, and you need to have appropriate financial backing to make it work by going mass upscaling on how many A380s you buy. They've only been able to get a few. They intend to get a whole bunch, but the few that they have got, they've got no real purpose or goal as to the direction that this airline's heading and as to what point they'll be able to do it. They obviously don't have the AOC. Right,
no, they're using HiFly's.
They used HiFly's AOC for this. Yeah. For those who don't know, AOC is Air Operator Certificate. It is essentially the license that allows an airline to operate their own aircraft. And they don't have that. And so it is just a giant sham. The first flight was a giant sham. It really was just a case of, I think, let's get something up on the ground, off the ground, so we are A, staying a little bit relevant. B, reminding people that we're still here and we can still do this, and C, I think, be able to say we are operating. We are an operating island,
three of those reasons are terrible reasons to do what they did.
Exactly. And Dad, here's a great another tidbit about Global, which sums them up perfectly. Okay. Most airlines, when they start up, grow organically across all internet platforms, across social media, across the web. You know, they grow their followings on, say, Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, television advertising presence, billboards, all that kind of stuff. But you know what Global Airlines did for their Twitter and for their Instagram pages is they approached two high-profile aviation spotters, one from Turkey and one from the United Kingdom, and offered them something like $5,000 to $10,000 to purchase their Instagrams that already had upwards of a few hundred thousand followers, and then completely rebrand as Global Airlines on those accounts. So rather than organically growing and saying, this is our account, put it out there, and people naturally come to it and go, oh, yeah, this looks interesting, I'll follow it. I think it'd be cool to follow their journey. Or, yes, I'll follow it because I'm a fan of Global Airlines. They've gone, let's purchase the fans. They purchased 700,000 followers by buying someone else's account and rebranding as Global Airlines.
Purchasing the fans of people like Aircraft Spotting, not Global
Airlines. Exactly right. Exactly right. And these accounts were already verified, which to them is important because I suppose most legitimate airlines will have the verification tick on those accounts. So it just feels so inauthentic, the whole thing.
I wonder how many of those followers have unsubscribed since that happened.
Exactly, exactly. It's a joke. So, yeah.
And in that interview, I was saying before how James Asquith got interviewed at Glasgow Airport before the first flight took off. Asked him what are the future plans for the airlines, and naturally you'd think, they'd have it all figured out. But his answer to it was, I don't know. We might be an airline. We might turn the A380 into a spa. He literally said, we might turn the A380 into a spa, which is crazy.
Nuts.
I mean...
So why is anyone flying this airline? I mean... they have any other planes? There's just this one.
They've got just four. Do they own two and have leased two, or I think they might own all four?
They wouldn't have owned all four. They'll all be leased, surely.
But they own at least more than one, definitely. I'm pretty sure it's two. Wait, let me actually look it up right now, actually. Global Airlines fleet. The answer is...
But Virgin Atlantic, when they started, they were a bit questionable as well, because they started with 1747.
Okay, yeah, I stand corrected. It is one aircraft.
Yeah, I thought it was just one A380 registered 9 hotel.
Oh, you know what?
Lima.
They have purchased another one. It hasn't been delivered. And ironically, guess where it's coming from?
China Southern.
HiFly.
Oh, right. Yeah.
It's coming from the airline that's actually, quote, operating their flights officially.
Well, that was one of the other things they were talking about as well. Like, obviously, the hard product wasn't great on the 380, but they were talking about the lack of training that the high flight staff had. So it just felt all over the place.
Yeah.
The service was
hard to take them seriously as well on launch when their launch products that they're announcing was a gamer class. A seat where the product itself had like consoles built into it, you know? What?
Oh, interesting USP. I mean, just, you know.
Yeah.
Supposedly, the flight home from New York to Glasgow was a lot better, but that was done when no press were on board, which was a bit stupid. Like, aren't you going to impress on the first flight, and then on the second one, you'll go, "Ah, oh, we'll slip here and there. You know, we can. There's no press on board." Like, it's the first flight, and everything just goes horribly wrong.
Horribly wrong. Yeah.
And
you realize it's not just some massive piss take by a rich kid who wants to.
No.
Well, it's not a rich kid either.
That's what I'm saying.
The money's not coming from him.
And as I said at the start, it's not a case of James Asquith went to the financial backers and said, "I want to do this." The backers approached him and said, "Will you be the face of this?" And he went, "Yeah, that's awesome. I get to be the owner of an airline. Hell yeah.
They went to him and said, "Do you know anything about running an airline?" He said, "No." He said, "Neither do we. Let's get into business together."
Yes, that's literally what it seems like.
But what's crazy is, I mean, we come back to James Asquith, what made him famous in the first place, which was Guinness World Record of the youngest person who has flown to every single country in the world. So the fact that he's done that has meant that he's flown a lot.
Yeah.
And he knows from that
cabin product
what makes a good airline and what doesn't make a good airline.
Yeah.
Which is crazy how he'll look at that and go, "Yeah, that's good."
Yeah.
Because it clearly isn't. Because the aspiration of this airline is to be as good as Emirates, is to be good as good as Qatar, is to be as good as Singapore Airlines, like the top carriers of the world. And that, seriously, was so far from it. It's incredible.
Just one last thing on this issue with Global. I posed the question when they first started across on my YouTube channel. I posed the question, what if Global Airlines transitioned into be the first low-cost carrier to operate with an A380 fleet? What are your guys' initial reaction to the idea of, say they did, the financial backers pulled through and they upscaled to an appropriate size fleet of A380s. They could institute a hub-and-spoke network out of Gatwick. What is that something that you think would A, be appealing, and B, be profitable?
No, I don't. It depends on what routes you put
trunk
it on,
routes, ultimately. Yeah.
But also, hub and spoke wouldn't work because no low cost carrier operates. Well, very
sorry. Few okay, low-cost okay. Carrier poor operate, poor example.
Operate the hub and spoke.
Poor example. Yeah. Probably you don't have enough airports that have infrastructure to accommodate the A380 to make a low-cost carrier work with it as well. That's something to consider, like runways that are long enough, gates that have jet bridges that accommodate the A380, all that kind of stuff.
HiFly, they're technically a charter airline, aren't
they? Yes.
Yeah. Not a I can't see it happening. If you look at the business model of low-cost carriers, I mean, how many low-cost carriers have gone under because they can't even keep an aircraft like a 787 profitable? And that's a far cheaper aircraft.
Shout out, Bonzo.
Yeah, 737 Max, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
And that's a far cheaper aircraft to run and purchase. And, you know, and they have to fill up less seats. And
The volume of seats you have to fill.
Yeah,
like Scoot and Jetstar are the only real long haul low cost carriers that come to mind that have made it.
Yeah,
and through most of them, like you hear people like talk about Scoot, you hear people talk about Jetstar long haul, and like, it's crap, you know, like from a passenger perspective. But like profits wise, they make money, which is what you want. But
they also well integrated those separate, well integrated with their parent airlines, which gives them additional support and flexibility as well. Which
yeah,
but I think there's a lot of airlines like Norwegian have not done too well. Like Norwegian got rid of the Dreamliners. I don't think TUI are doing all too well with them.
Well, see, TUI was a charter holiday charter carrier as well. He sort of tried to become a low cost carrier, and it didn't really work either. So,
but
interesting.
No, yeah. I don't know. I think the general consensus is that A380, no good. A380 was originally designed by Airbus anyway to operate a hub and spoke. And low-cost carriers don't do hub and spoke. They do point-to-point.
They don't.
That's fact.
I'm going to quickly transition now. Poignant, because the A380 is notorious for augmented flying. Three or more pilots in the cockpit because of the length of flight. But let's say there's only two pilots, a non-augmented service. Maybe it's within Europe. Some airlines are faced with unique challenges in those instances. And I believe, Dad, you can speak to this if we look at Lufthansa.
That's right. It's actually, yes, A320, a captain.
Yeah.
A320, but a captain went to the toilet and decided that he left his first officer in charge, and the first officer was fine. But after he went out of the cockpit, the first officer had an unexpected medical episode, lost consciousness, and for 8 minutes, no one was flying the plane. I assume it was on autopilot.
Yeah.
It
sounds like German Wings. Oh, well, I mean, in the first officer, we established that the German Wings, the first officer, was like, that was actually a malicious act. Like, he meant to fly the aircraft into the side of the mountain, didn't
Whoa,
he?
Whoa, yeah.
But sorry about that.
No, so anyway, they have this... there was a way to get into the cockpit, of course. I mean, you have to, even though, obviously, since 9/11, it's very hard. They actually have an emergency, like a timer. Like, you put in the code, and then there's a delay in it. Now, by the time he got back into the cockpit, they found that the first officer was pale, sweating, and exhibiting unusual movements.
Yikes.
Wow.
So, anyway, they took control of the aircraft and managed to land. They actually found there was a doctor on board. Classic.
Yeah.
There's a doctor on the
There's
plane.
Always. Is anybody here a doctor?
Yeah, a dentist that raises his hand. You're not a doctor.
I'm a doctor in astrophysics.
I was actually in a situation like that in New Orleans, actually. It was on a tram, of all things.
Oh.
And it was nighttime. Anyway, someone was crossing in front of the tram, got hit by the tram.
Whoa.
So the driver slammed on the brakes, hops out. About 20 seconds later, jumps back on the tram and says, "Is there a doctor on the
no
tram?"
No way. And was there?
No.
Oh.
Just, yeah. Anyway.
Jeez.
So they landed in Madrid, as it turned out.
Madrid, yes.
They diverted to the nearest airport. And,
jeez. Pan or straight Mayday? What are we saying in that?
I didn't say. Apparently he had maintained class one medical, no limitations, a previously undetected thing.
That's unreal.
No, so it was very...
I'd say pan call, by the way. There's no inherent danger to the aircraft itself. No, because I think you were asking Mayday or Pan-Pan. Because I had this thing with Christos the other day. Like, what do you call Pan-Pan or Mayday? And unless there's inherent danger to, like, the safety of the aircraft in the way it flies. Like, if there's something wrong with the aircraft, like, say if the aircraft, like, the engine blew up or something like that, that'd be Mayday. But I think if, like, pilot issue or something like that, like, the aircraft's still under control, it's Pan-Pan.
Interesting.
But he says he's got no memory. Apparently, he lost consciousness so quickly.
Yeah,
that he didn't have time to warn anyone. He said,
just like that.
Just lost it, and then next thing he knows, he's been.
I wonder if it, when he was coming out of it, he thought for a second, "Am I hypoxic?" You know what I mean? You would, being in the cockpit, you'd think, "Holy moly!" Like, it's got to be an external factor. It can't be me, especially if it's he's got a class one medical and he's in good condition. You'd think he wouldn't have any reason to personally think it's an issue with him. He'd have to think it's an issue with something going on with the flight.
So it was Lufthansa A321. So those people who want to risk it next time.
I think we all know if they really want to risk it with Lufthansa, they can take the A340-600s. that's really where the risk is with Lufthansa.
They plan to retire them, actually. So
They just report from a incident on British Airways from departure at Gatwick in June last year. The report's just come out about this aborted takeoff. What happened? The first officer's pilot in control, and as they're zooming down the runway to hit V1, and for some reason he has a brain fade, and instead of pulling back on the control on the
controls
to actually
rotate.
He actually just puts his other hand on the throttle and just puts on full throttle. He mixed up his left and right hands, which led to a high-speed aborted takeoff, a brake fire, and a 50-minute closure of Gatwick's one and only runway.
Oh, my gosh.
He had no explanation for why he did it. He was well-rested.
No.
He said this action slipped. He just mistakenly used his left hand on the control yoke instead of his right. This action slipped, disrupted the routine. So they had to abort the takeoff at 192 miles an hour.
I reckon if his wife was told that, she'd be like, "Yeah, sounds about right."
So anyway, yeah. So it caught fire because they had to jam it. Yeah, he only did it for it was only a few seconds before they realised. But they're just in the, you know, safety first. I thought we'd better abort. So yeah, it caught. So the brakes overheated so bad it caught fire.
Oh, wow.
They had to evacuate all the passengers safely, which fortunately
was this after V1, was it?
Mm, after
that's,
V1,
that's yeah. that is crazy and they recovered. Dangerous.
Yeah, they
that
recovered.
Is so dangerous.
Yeah.
Well, V2 is when you it's point of no return. But yeah. So he was able to do it. But
nuts. Yeah.
Wow.
Expensive and completely ridiculous mistake. So yeah.
Big time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, people want to know why their flights are delayed.
Oh, yes. Exactly.
Operational reason, yeah.
Until a different
story. That'll be cited in the Congress hearing, for sure. Yeah, because one pilot on British Airways, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, classic. Hey, guys, speaking of disruptions to the aerodrome, let's talk about back home here in Australia, Western Sydney International, taking a unique approach to air traffic control. Really, I'd say future-proofing Australian aerodrome management. They are going to undergo a digital aerodrome service, or DAS, as it's known as. DAS Auto, you might even say. Sorry, mate. Really bad joke. Yeah, look, it's already in full swing in Canberra. The tower there is now finished. Canberra is fully under DAS at the moment. Yeah, they have no controlled tower. It is a 30-meter pole with just shy of 100 cameras spanning vision of the entire aerodrome with no gaps. And Canberra is currently being managed by a centre in Melbourne, I believe. And it's all remote. And WSI, Western Sydney International, when it's up and running, will be the first arterial airport to run with a fully automated remote ATC tower. Same thing. It'll be a 40-meter high tower with just shy of 100 cameras again, and that'll provide full coverage. And they're also doing it in Byron Bay, which, which if you ask any airline pilot today, on the weekends, very much needed because it is downright dangerous for airline pilots on the weekend around the Byron Bay Aerodrome.
It's just private jets, isn't
you,
it?
Yeah. Because you get all of the wealthy retirees flying their Cessnas or their Cirrus two-seaters, and they have zero regard for the big jets that are nearby. Yeah, the amount of pilots that will tell you that it's just such a headache on a weekend to drive to and from Ballina, drive the bus. It's crazy.
I think it's the future. Drive the bus. You know, if you look at, you know, there's a lot of regional airports in Australia which have limited or virtually no aerodrome traffic control. Obviously, a regional ATC. Mm. You can introduce that relatively cheaply for a lot of places, like you say, Byron Bay. There'll be other ones too where they don't have it.
Big time.
You imagine if Newark had that. You know, suddenly down, you can transfer control to.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah. Is that this centre in Melbourne, where it's currently that is currently managing Canberra, right? It is an ATC centre. It is a fully organ like it's a fully set up a fully established room which represents Canberra Tower. Like the equipment, the technology, everyone in there is managing Canberra. And right across the hallway, they'll have another room, which will be Western Sydney Tower. And further down the hallway, they'll have another room, which will be Byron Bay Tower. And the advantages of consolidating all aerodrome management into one centre works perfectly if you're understaffed. Because you can transfer staff between towers at a moment's notice, which in the US right now would be a heaven send. You know, be able to transfer. Let's say traffic is down in Nashville, but it's up in Dulles. Let's shift one guy across because we can afford to do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's in the US, that's needed. Here in Australia, relatively, I mean, we had the thing coming out of COVID with Sydney where they locked themselves out of the tower. Then there was no one in the tower for upwards of 45 minutes. That was kind of embarrassing. But they spoke of understaffing issues at Sydney, which it didn't really ultimately matter because they're capped at a certain number of slots anyway, because of the curfew. But yeah.
One, I think, because air traffic control is done, you don't need to be at the airport. It's really just air drone control.
Yeah.
If you look at, say, southeast England, there's that massive ATC there, which is the middle of the English countryside.
Yeah.
Nowhere near Heathrow or Gatwick or whatever, and that's does all of southeast England.
Yeah, right.
But they still have people at the airport because of aircraft movements on the ground and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, that's the way to. I reckon it's the way of the future.
It will. I think it certainly will be the way of the future.
Until you get a power, someone trips over the plug in the power outage and you put out the whole country at once.
Yeah, literally. And it's funny, talking to someone about this today, actually, they mentioned, wouldn't it be a smart idea to go remote on board the aircraft in the flight deck? And there's pros and cons. I would say an ultimate con would be it opens a new avenue to terror, because
100%
similar to vehicles that can be remotely operated by engineers on when you call the helpline, my vehicle isn't working, one sec, let me tap into the vehicle, and it's drivable by company engineers. You could have the same thing with the aircraft. People could hack into it.
Again, we're a long way from people being happy with that.
Resistant to change, naturally, society. Yeah, no, I agree. Look, we've really baited you guys, the listeners, for last week and this week about what is happening in Amsterdam.
Yeah,
guys, what is happening? We need to know.
Well, it's interesting about, so we're talking about Western Sydney and all their design issues or whatever, but in Schiphol, being a responsible airport, of course, they've been trying to reduce their carbon emissions, and it's an issue for the industry as a whole, but certainly for airports around the world. They're putting these solar panels in. I don't know if you've been to Darwin Airport. There's a massive solar farm right next to the airport.
Yeah, they're going to Melbourne now too, just near the spotting area. Yeah. Yep.
So they're doing this because obviously they have a huge footprint and they've got plenty of space to put these. So in Schiphol, they put out these solar panels, but they put it right in a position where between 10 a.m. and 12 p.m. in certain times of the year, on sunny days, the reflection off these panels is so bad they have to close runway 18R for landings.
Because it blinds the pilots?
Blinds the pilots. So they've got operational constraints caused by the reflection of the solar panels.
Yes.
Who made that idea? Was that like, we got 5, 6 runways at Schiphol, one runway down, doesn't matter, saving emissions?
I don't think they've got 6 runways. I think they've only got... I'll have to look up.
They got a lot of runways.
Schiphol...
What's the
runways?
What's the big one? What's the
six
one,
runways?
I have got 6 runways.
What's the one they? What's the one that's far away? They call it? It's like the
Polderbahn
or something. Like, I don't know what it is.
Oh my gosh! Yes, you absolute aviation nerd. How the heck did you? Yes, Polderbahn. I've just looked it up.
There's one that may as well be in bloody Belgium. It's that far away.
The Polderbahn is the one that is. I mean, look at that taxi distance there. I'm just showing for the listeners' home. I'm just showing it, but it's crazy. The taxi isn't.
It's worse than the second Sydney one where you have to
feel
like you're driving to Melbourne. When you
Yes, well, the new Melbourne one will be quite the taxi too.
That'll be.
But it's interesting that, it's those little things you don't think of.
Yeah.
You think, there's some land there, let's get some solar panels up to save our, our carbon emissions, and it never occurred to us that on a sunny day.
Yeah, and going back to last week when we spoke about how you could have delays due to operational circumstances.
That's right.
We're
waiting for the clouds to come over.
Delayed due to the sun. That's we are delayed. Your flight is delayed 30 minutes due to the sun being out.
Well, let's hope that doesn't happen at Changi's new T5, which...
Oh, you've got an update for us on Changi.
Well, they released the initial footage of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're
I am going in blind on this one. I don't know anything about it.
Basically, T5 is a terminal that Changi say they need to strengthen themselves
big time
for the future of Singapore's aviation. And T5 in its own right is going to be bigger than all four terminals combined.
Really? Mm.
That's how big this thing is.
Whoa.
And they released the footage of what the terminal and the surrounding look like.
Oh, there's the work site.
So that's Terminal 5. So if you've ever been to Changi recently, you'll see like a massive field of just diggers. And that's what Terminal 5 is going to be. But yeah, that's scheduled to open in 2030.
Okay, yeah, a little point on Changi Terminal 5. We spoke last week again about how Qatar's Q-Suite was the gold standard and streets ahead of every other airline. I would say that Changi is the equivalent of that.
Absolutely.
Well, Changi is striving to be the best airport in the world and has been the best airport in the world for God knows how long, the most awarded airport in the world. I mean, Doha's trying. I mean, they had that new extension a few years ago, which looks incredibly like the Jewel. Like, you know that garden section? There's a garden section at the top and everyone's like, oh, it's so Jewel-esque. And then, I don't know. I think, yeah.
It's cool, yeah.
But the new Singapore Changi T5, the official release of that, which is...
Release video. It looks crazy.
Which looks crazy. It definitely puts them up there as the best airport. But there's a lot of competition.
There is.
I mean, Dubai are looking to move their airport in 10 years.
Fully, yeah. To the Dubai World...
Yeah, to Jebel Ali. So DWC will be the new...
Do you see that? They announced that?
We talked about that actually when I was on the stream last time in April. We're talking about speculation that they confirmed that like 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
Al Maktoum. That's it, Al Maktoum. International airport.
Crazy. So,
which they need to do because they've only got... They've got the two runways in the current Dubai, but... It's busy all the time. So when they do runway resurfacing, it basically puts, that takes several weeks.
Shout out Ultima Airport Dubai.
Yeah. And as you'll know, because Emirates is so integral in the global aviation, it just literally disrupts global airline schedule around the world for just because they're doing one of their runways there.
It's nuts. No. But they can't move everywhere because they can't move anywhere because the airport surrounds all built up anyway. Mm. You know, like to the north of it, you got Sharjah. To the south of it,
Dubai's not a very big place.
No.
But you obviously, we talked about your honeymoon last week, Tom, and the fact that you went into Dubai, and maybe a lot of the viewers have been into Dubai through, you know, going to Europe.
I tell you who Dubai hasn't been into Dubai.
Ross.
He claims, but going into DXB is not going into Dubai.
It is not, no.
I have not been to Dubai. I've been into DXB. I've been into Dubai Airport. And I'll say that openly.
I respect that. But we've flown into DXB, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners have flown in and out of DXB. It's probably the biggest... No, it's not the international. It's not the biggest...
Have you been in the Emirates Lounge?
Yeah, we talked about that on the last one.
That's right, sorry.
Is it the biggest international hub of the world? DXB?
It has to be one of them. I don't know.
It has to be up there. Like, I know it's not the biggest hub of the world. I mean, that Atlanta.
Yeah.
You know, that's Delta's, that, you know, that's the biggest hub. But, like, internationally wise, DXB has got to be up there. You go through that airport, and admittedly, I walk through it nowadays. Like, especially when I, like, last time I went to Europe, I went through Changi.
Yeah.
And then I went Melbourne, Changi, Dubai to London. Admittedly, coming from Changi, walking into Dubai, I'm like, yeah, this place is a bit... Like, it's amazing. It's so grand. But you walk around, you start to look around a bit more in depth, and you go, it's starting to age a bit, to be honest.
Yeah.
But it's like, for most countries of the world, you look at that and you go, why would you need an airport that's bigger? This place is massive.
Yeah,
like,
huge.
T3 in Dubai, the Emirates mega hub.
It's insane.
Concourse A, which was a concourse... purely built just for A380s. So every gate at Concourse A is like A380 gates.
Big time.
Which is insane.
And
you go in there and you go, why would this place need to get any bigger? But it does. It's reached capacity and it's beyond capacity at the moment, which is insane. But yeah, you're talking about the A380, you're talking about the Emirates Lounge. The Emirates Lounges in Dubai are nuts. Because they're as big as the airport themselves.
Yeah, you come straight out and you go straight onto the business class on the A380 because
it goes the length. Yeah, crazy. But isn't
it is the length of the
tomb. Jet Bridges straight off the. Hey, speaking of nuts, some people might consider this next topic nuts. China Southern. Just quickly, we're going to talk about this. They're selling all their 787-8s. Specifically, last week I inferred in the intro that was their entire fleet. It's actually just their 787-8 variants. The reason that is cited by China Southern is that they are looking to double down on the more modern and futurized versions of the 78. They believe the 78-9 variant and -10 variants meet that requirement quite nicely. I mean, the 787-9 wing length is actually the standard wing length for all carrier types. It's designed perfectly to be the most fuel efficient on the -9 variant. The -8, the wings, it's kind of like a puppy dog where the ears are way bigger than the rest of the head because they haven't got to full size yet. It's kind of like that. You know, the wings are larger on the 78-8 variant and they're smaller on the -10 variant. You're actually losing efficiency on the -10 variant. So the reason that they've cited for that is just to future-proof their fleet. But it does show to a greater trend around the world of mainstay carriers of different countries, legacy carriers, trying to futurize their fleet. And I will say a quick point on that because we spoke last week also about the product reveal for a lot of the legacy carriers. We did note also that Qantas is absent from that list. They're trying to future-proof their fleet at the moment. Obviously, Project Sunrise, the product that they have put on that it looks phenomenal. It does. It looks amazing. But in terms of what they put on their long range, their Neo XLR A321s, which they've said outright are going to be predominantly for international services, the business class does seem a bit lacking the product there in comparison to a lot of the products that are the industry is moving towards for narrow body product, and it's a little bit underwhelming, it's a little bit disappointing. That's all I'll say on that. I just say Qantas, I was a little bit surprised. That's all.
Yeah, just to add to that, like it's just, I mean, Qantas are, you know, Project Sunrise looks amazing. I like the fact that they've chosen to refurbish some of their newer 330-200s as well,
yeah,
in the economy class section. Because one thing I've noticed with the 330s is that they're the workhorses of the fleet when it comes to international travel, to the point of where the 330-200s are split into domestic configured and international configured.
Yeah.
And it's getting to the point now where it's just so worked, it's quite normal now to fly from Melbourne to Singapore on a domestic configured 330. And what that means is that, one, in economy, you don't get in-flight entertainment. They give you an iPad and you stick it on the back of the seat and that's that. But two, there's less galley space for the crew to create your meals and, you know, have the flexibility to, you know, to have crew rest and all that sort of stuff. But this new refurbishment, in economy at least, fixes that issue of what I said earlier of in-flight entertainment.
Okay.
So you got a brand new seat, which I think the standard nowadays for Qantas, they're all going Recaros, which is, you know, looks all right. But I think it's the in-flight entertainment that's going to be the good thing for the new 330s because most of them don't have it. They give you an iPad. I mean, Melbourne to Perth, Melbourne to Sydney, I guess and that's all right. But like Melbourne to Singapore, no in-flight entertainment. You look at the competition. I mean, Jetstar 787s have seat back entertainment.
Yes. Not for long. Their new fleet renewal project have announced that the 78 refit will avoid in-flight entertainment in favor of Wi-Fi, which early signs, I'll say it right now, the future of the industry is Wi-Fi and passengers fending for their own entertainment on their phones. Because, I mean, there's data to back it up to suggest that
people are doing that already, aren't they?
Yeah, people don't use IFE, you know? Well, so
just to go back to global airlines.
One of the things
that Noel Phillips said was that they said the one reason why they didn't focus too heavily on they didn't focus too heavily on in-flight entertainment because they said that studies show that most people would rather get their iPad out and watch Netflix either through Wi-Fi or, you know, they've downloaded a series of, you know, The Office or something on their iPad, and they'd rather do that than have what's already programmed on in-flight entertainment. And I can kind of agree with that, because if you go, like, even some of the best in-flight entertainments in the world, like Emirates ICE, for example, in my opinion, best in-flight entertainment in the world. But what they do is they have random seasons and random episodes in each season for the TV shows, for example. Like, and it just doesn't make any sense. So, like, one of my...
The Office, season 11, episode 12, and that's it.
Yeah, and then it'll jump to, like, season 12, episode 2 or something like that. And like, these sorts of shows flow. I know I'm being, like, nitpicky and all that sort of stuff, but, you know what I mean? Like, having the flexibility of just... Like, Emirates Eyes is amazing. Got a million things on it, but there's always going to be something on there that you want to watch that isn't on there, regardless of how much stuff you put. You can't put everything on. That's a fact. But I think for people to just know what they want to watch, and there's people like me who just don't watch movies sometimes. They just glue, just want to listen to music, or they just glue their eyes onto the in-flight maps. That's half the time I use the in-flight entertainment just to look at the maps.
What do they call it? Raw dogging? When you're not looking at any of the...
Nah, raw dogging is nothing. You sit there and you... Nothing. You can't even look at maps. You just sit there, no music, no nothing. So I can't say that I've raw dogged it, but...
Hey, speaking of cabin product, I believe we have some movement in the low-cost carrier space on product.
This is interesting.
Well, brought to you first by Michael O'Leary, the man who never found a cost that he couldn't cut from an airplane.
Exactly.
How do you get fewer people queuing to go to the toilet? Charge them.
Yep, you charge them for it.
Like Global Airlines, that was a bit of publicity stunt when he said all that sort of stuff.
Caring, sensitive, shy and retiring.
So sure, I'm retiring. CEO would love this story coming out of the Italian company Avio Interiors.
Ooh.
Finally have come up with a workable standing up seat.
Yes.
Which is actually a seat. It's kind of almost like... it's a pole with a seat sort of attached to it, basically.
Yeah.
Almost like you'd hold on to it on a tram or a bus or something. But it's got a seat that sort of slopes down. You have to sort of sit squatting on it.
You don't fully
sit on it in terms of taking all your weight. You sort of squat onto it. Just that, the only reason they have that is so they can put a seatbelt around you for the takeoff.
It's like, I don't know, like maybe we have some viewers that don't live in Melbourne, but have you ever been on like the old trams? Or like, I think maybe even some of the new trams have it where it's like,
the little cushion.
Yeah, the little cushion thing backing that you can rest on. You're not
sitting.
You're not fully standing, but you're not fully sitting either. You're closer to standing than you are sitting.
It's like a cushion bar.
A bar stool with a seat backing.
Yeah. So they're attached to the floor, sitting by poles, I was saying, has a seat pitch of 23 inches. compared with Ryanair's existing average seat pitch of 30 inches. Will be rubbing his hands with this one.
Dollars onto the eyes.
Can fit up to 20 more passengers on short-haul flights lasting two. This is a man who wanted to take out an extra the toilets to put like six extra seats in the 737. Imagine what he can do with 20% more passengers.
Just ridiculous.
So though he claims, and so do EasyJet and JetBlue, that they have no plans at this stage to implement it. But
no plans.
And that's probably because it hasn't been passed by regulators. But if I tell you what, once if that gets up... in terms of regulators, you'll be first on that.
And you know who else is in support of making money through cost cutting in that?
Making money is actually a good thing.
Very good thing. Thanks, Alan.
And the reality is, we laugh about it, but if it's the right price, people do it. If people, you know, fly from Melbourne to Sydney for $10 and you're sitting on this, people do it.
Oh, absolutely. I would. 100%.
I would too.
Boeing will have to make a new variant of the 737 MAX, the 737 MAX 220. Because you know how they made the 737 MAX 200? They had to put the extra emergency exit door for the 200 passengers to fit legalities.
And the fact that an extra door, because one was going to fly off, so they have a spare.
Yeah, they should call it the 737 Min. That's stupid, I know, sorry. All right, well, finally, guys, I just wanted to bring your attention and the viewers' attention to actually a TV show that has decided to scratch an itch for a lot of av geeks out there and a lot of non-av geeks who have not really taken an interest in aviation. It's shining a light on a particular issue within the aviation industry, specifically under the human factors. Mm. Our friend Nathan Fielder, who is known for his cynical and very dry form of comedy across multiple shows that he's done in the last 10 years, He has a show called The Rehearsal on HBO Max. Now, he's done one season of this already. It was very popular. HBO then filled his pockets with an insane budget for season two and said, go ham. And he has used this budget to fund a long-time aviation interest that he's had, which is the dynamic between the first officer and the captain in the cockpit. Mm. Now, the idea, the thing that he addresses in this show is why is it that first officers feel that they cannot speak up to a superior in the captain? He cites a lot of different accidents that have occurred as a result of improper communication between the two pilots. A lot of them, the first officer, didn't feel as though they could speak up to the captain. Now, I've got the trailer here. I'll let you all have a listen to it now. This is Nathan Fielder's The Rehearsal, Season 2.
I've been studying commercial aviation disasters as a hobby, and I started to notice a disturbing pattern in the causes of these crashes. 15 years ago, you recommended role-playing exercises. The FAA
said no. For whatever reason, they're just not going there.
I do have some experience with creating elaborate role-playing scenarios, and I do have money to put towards this.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there.
Let's work together to save some lives.
Welcome to our stage.
Oh, wow.
Have you ever acted before?
No, I haven't.
Would you be willing to dress as a pilot?
Why not?
It's hard for us to be the people we ideally want to be. And the social pressures are on everyone, including pilots.
What do you fly over at JetBlue?
320, 321.
Okay.
Well, that's cool.
If you can put the emotion into it to make you feel, it's going to change you.
Last thing I would want is anyone to feel unsafe.
How could that happen?
In order to make change, it's going to take something different.
Mr. Fielder, where does your sense of altruism come from? Where all of a sudden you want to save lives, you're known for pranking.
Ah, please!
This is not sincere.
So yes, the show covers some insane angles on how to get to the bottom of it. A couple of quick spoilers. If you're not a spoilers person, tune out. But the show, over six episodes, one, he creates a genuine full-scale American Idol singing competition where first officers are the judges in order to determine how first officers go delivering bad news to a participant. Two, he dresses up full head to toe as Sully Sullenberger and lives the life of Sully Sullenberger from childhood. I'm talking like dresses as baby Sully Sullenberger, through to adult Sully Sullenberger to determine how it is that he was able to take on advice from his first officer. A lot of this is very fascinating, but at the same time, there's a comedic element to it. And then finally, and this is nuts, and if you really don't want the final spoiler of the whole show, stop listening for about 20 seconds, but he spends HBO's budget money. We're talking like tens of thousands of dollars on this one particular thing. He spends 5 years training to get his commercial pilot's license, training on type on the 737, getting a type rating, and he himself gets to the rank of airline captain as the comedian in charge of making the show and puts GoPro cameras inside an actual 737 aircraft that he is in command of, full of hundreds of passengers, and becomes the pilot in control to try and see if it's just, if the first officer captain dynamic is just universal despite whether or not the captain is someone that's considered open or not. It is insane, the level.
What airline is he flying for?
It's a charter airline. specifically. Global. Yeah, it's a charter airline. And then finally now, he's no longer a comedian. He actually now flies as a 737 pilot full-time for Captain Bob at Nomadic Airlines, who is known for having upwards of 8 type ratings, and their entire job as a company is repositioning aircraft on behalf of airlines and stuff. Yeah, he works cool. for them as their 737 specialist.
Yeah, he single-handedly keeps A&Ms in business, mate.
It genuinely seems like this guy took a HBO Max budget and said, yeah, I'll make a comedy show, but just use that as an excuse to do his type rating to learn to fly. It is insane. But look, if you have a spare couple of hours, Christos, give it a look.
Missed that one, mate.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. Give it a look, guys. Imagine getting hexed. Well worth it.
Imagine getting hexed per if you fly.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Well, look, we've covered everything over the last two episodes. We've gotten you all back up to date at home from September to now, and hopefully it won't be too long before we are speaking to you guys again.
No,
thanks for being on the ride with us, and yeah, well, look, until next time, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.